Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It's 5:09, and it's Friday. It's January 8th, 2016. We made it through another week, and so did the Chinese stock market without blowing up. Last night it was volatile. Things were volatile, but the Asian markets did rebound after that plunge the night before, and the markets did end up in the green finally one day this week. The Chinese stock market, the Shanghai Composite Index, up about 2.4% at 31.99. By late morning after swinging into the loss and gain territory, trading in the Chinese stock market was suspended, you'll recall, Thursday after a key index plunged about 7%. Then China's stock market removed those curbs that they put in place so that things would not stop and cease and scare everybody to death all around the world. Stocks worldwide and oil fell on concern about weaker Chinese demand. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial sank about 392 points, or about 2.3% to 16,514. At one point, the Dow was down about 450 points, or about 2.6%. The S&P 500 gave up about 47 points yesterday, 2.4% of its value to 1943. The NASDAQ Composite dropped about 146 points, or 3% to 46.89.43. Benchmark U.S. crude oil rose to just under $34 a barrel. And that means the price you're paying at the pump is going to remain right around $2 or less, $1.70 if you head outside of the city of Chicago, now near Champaign, down toward central Illinois, $1.60, I've been told. The dollar gained against the yen and fell against the euro. The day ahead, major business. For months, U.S. employers have steadily added jobs, even as global growth has flagged and financial markets have sunk. Today, the Labor Department jobs report for December may provide some hints of whether that trend can endure. Also today, the Commerce Department will issue its November report on wholesale stockpiles, and the Federal Reserve will release consumer credit data for November as well. Well, the opening bell on WGN 720 is going to have a conversation now about the business of sports, and it's going to focus a little bit because the college football playoff national championship game is January 11th, Cardinal Stadium in Glendale, Arizona, and it will feature Alabama and Clemson. So that's sort of brought up to us just what is the business of sports, how much money is being made by places like Arizona, Glendale, Arizona, and how much are we paying to enjoy our sports? And Mark Carman, TBO Sport, joins us on the opening bell this morning. Mark, good morning. Thanks for being here with us.
Good morning, Steve. Are you who are you rooting for? Let's start with the fun stuff. Alabama or Clemson?
I'm going to go with Clemson just because I think they have a stronger team. I think Clemson's going to do it. What about you?
I like Clemson too, just for the name Dabo Swinney. I mean, that is the name that you don't hear every day. And Alabama's had enough winning. You gotta like the Tigers and a little bit of an upset. Are you planning on attending this game? Because I've got tickets for you here, Steve. We've got I got a Northeast Terrace level corner on StubHub for a mere $175 a seat, which is down from what it once was.
And what altitude is that?
That is
20,000 feet.
That's you remember that guy that fell from.
Yep.
From wherever he fell from.
That's his seat?
The free fall. You're right next to where he was.
Oh boy.
But that's you're in the building, so to speak.
Well, how much is a court seat?
Well,
how much would be a seat by the, you know, go, down further?
Let's go 50-yard line. Maybe less than one would think, I suppose. Row 5, section 109 on the Clemson side, you're in for a mere $1,000 a seat.
Well, that's not bad.
So $1,000, you take a friend, that's $2,000. Mm-hmm. Parking, let's make it a reasonable parking nowadays, called $25. Mm-hmm. So now you're at $2,025. You haven't had a beverage or a hot dog yet,
nope.
But, you know, so.
I might want one of those fuzzy hands, too. What do you think?
You definitely need a foam finger. There's no question. So, it's quite expensive. You know, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on as far as StubHub, too, which we can get into. As far as if you buy that seat, it might not actually be your seat if something crazy happens and the value of the seat goes way up and the ticket, whoever sold you the ticket might take it back and StubHub won't validate it.
Okay. How does that work?
Well, there. See, have you heard of Kobe Bryant? I'm sure out in L.A. Right. So Kobe Bryant, at the beginning of the year, he wasn't retired, and then a little bit into the season, he decided he would retire. Yeah. Well, a Laker fan bought seats for Lakers in Utah last game of the regular season, paid $150 a seat for. Or I think it was 180, I should say, want to get it correct here, for a lower-level seat. And he's got his four tickets. He's taking his buddies. He's fired up to go. Kobe announces that he's going to retire. The value in the section for those seats goes to $1,500. And he gets a letter from StubHub, and they say, hey, sorry, your tickets are no longer valid. We apologize, but there's nothing we can do. So apparently there's a loophole in there. If you pull back your tickets from StubHub, they will ban you for 3 months, and maybe there's like a 20% fine on the sale that you have to pay. But in this scenario where the seats went from $200 to $1,500, it's in the seller's benefit to pull them back and be banned, because those seats are now worth, you know, if you added up four seats, $6,000. Before he was getting about $5,000. Let's do the math. He's willing to pay that 20% hit on the $1,000, the extra $200. And this has happened before too.
Right. And it's happening with all kinds of sporting events, right? Not just these big ones, right?
It's got to be a major event to change it. But it happened with Derek Jeter's retirement in New York. And listen, StubHub needs to honor that ticket, for one. And StubHub is a huge company with massive dollars. And listen, if something like that happens and they got to eat $6,000, I think for their own image, they need to do it. But the other side of it is, people out there, yeah, if you make a decision to sell that seat and something changes, where's the integrity? But you can't rely on people, Steve. It's sad.
Let's follow the money here. Who's making the money? Is it you know, obviously StubHub's making money. These sellers are making money. But when a place like Glendale, Arizona, and Arizona, by the way, has been getting a lot of these sporting events.
Yeah, they have.
Who's making the money here?
Well, that's a big time question there. Outside of, in this case, the NCAA, I mean, Arizona hosted Super Bowl 49. That was, you know, a year ago, could be February. They're having college football's second ever championship game coming up here on Monday, and then they're going to have the Final Four in April of 2017. And, you know, here in Chicago, I mean, some people look around and say, hey, why can't we get the Final Four to the United Center while the venue is not big enough? Or why couldn't we get, there was a cold weather Super Bowl in New York, why couldn't we get it here? Maybe someday, but Soldier Field has the lowest capacity. And then you have other, you know, cold weather cities that build retractable roofs. We obviously do not have that. So, I mean, we brought the NFL draft to Chicago, but you're talking about the dollars. And people will say that, you know, it benefits that particular area. Obviously, Arizona feels that it does. But depending on who you read, it's real dicey as to the actual benefit. A recent report, right, says the Super Bowl created a financial gain for the city of Phoenix, Glendale, $13,000. But there's also a report that worth it caused a loss of $1.2 million. So these numbers as to the true benefit and how many people were there and who spent what on food and lodging, the whole deal, it depends on what you read, really. The benefit, though, Arizona gets a free 4 hours on Monday night, in theory, of, hey, this is, look at how beautiful our state is. Look at, it's a great place to vacation, and how awesome is it to watch a football game here?
We're talking with Mark Harmon of TBS Sport 521. This is the opening bell on WGN 720. We're talking with Mark Harmon of TBS Sport about the business of sports, having a conversation about this. And Mark, I just, you know, it's just a regular guy who doesn't make a lot of money. Have I been priced out of this sports arena, because I can't afford these tickets?
Well, here's what I would say about that, Steve, the real concern. Not only are you being priced out, you're certainly priced out of the lower level, like myself and everybody else out there who's not making significant six figures. I mean, like $100,000 to afford, you know, Cubs tickets right now, you want four seats in a great seat. I mean, that's $40,000 for the year. I mean, you need significant income. But I think the big concern for fans right now is, where's it going as far as in the TV marketplace? Because every single network is starting up. You know, the Cubs are going to have their own network, and are we going to pay for it? And how much is your cable bill going to go? It's not just whether or not you can go and have a great seat like you used to be able to have. Now a regular guy's going to be in the nosebleeds, paying a lot to be there, by the way. Mm-hmm. And then even watching at home, I think moving down the line, it's going to be, at some point, might be cost prohibitive there as well. People might just say, no, I'm not going to do it.
In your expertise, you touched on this, again, real briefly, are we ever going to have a Super Bowl in Chicago?
No.
Never? Never?
No. Never is a long time. It's 30 years down the line, they get rid of Soldier Field, they build a whole retractable roof, and then maybe. Yep. But that would, I think we're a long ways away from that. I hope to be here at that point.
We actually may be on Mars by then.
Well, that'd be, it wouldn't be all terrible. Might be a cool place.
Mark Harmon, TVO Sport, thanks for being with us on the opening bell this morning. Good of you to come in and have a great rest of the day.
My pleasure, Steve.
All right, thanks. 5:23 on the opening bell, and there's been a lot of talk this week about Twitter expanding the number of words, letters, characters that you can put in a tweet, maybe to 10,000. It sounds crazy. Also, Facebook is talking about adding virtual reality to its offerings. Can you imagine that, being on Facebook with your buddies or your mom or your grandma or whoever you're friends with on Facebook doing virtual reality? Kurt Wagner has been a business and tech journalist since 2012. He is a former reporter at Mashable, and he's now at Recode. And he joins us on the newsline from San Francisco, and he's been writing about this in Recode. First, Kurt, let's talk about Facebook. What are they doing this year?
Facebook is so broad nowadays that when you ask, where's it going in 2016, there's a bunch of different kind of avenues, I think, that are worth mentioning. The first, and is kind of relevant today, is the virtual reality space, which they just launched, announced pre-orders for their Oculus Rift virtual reality headset, which is going to start shipping later this year. So that's one area that's kind of new to Facebook, but that's going to be more prevalent in 2016. I think when you look at, what they're doing with Instagram, I think you're going to start to see that become a lot more business-friendly. So what I mean by that is they're going to actually start making a lot more revenue from Instagram than they have been in the past, so that's going to become a bigger part of their business. And then, when you look kind of abroad, I think that the company is making a lot of effort to figure out how it can grow its business in parts of the world where people are just coming onto the internet for the very first time. And what I mean by that is, these emerging markets like Brazil and India and Indonesia, where folks maybe haven't had, phones that had Wi-Fi access. They're just getting that for the very first time, and Facebook wants to be there to greet them. And so they're setting up a lot of stuff right now to try and be there for those people so that one of their first internet experiences is on Facebook. We'll see if they can continue to do that, but that's been a point of emphasis for them over the last year and definitely going to continue into 2016.
Why is it that Facebook seems to have the best revenue outside of the United States?
Two things. One, it's hard to find a product out there that has as many users as Facebook does, right? So the company has 1.5 billion people who use Facebook every day around the world. That's pretty much unprecedented. So in terms of reach, they're about as big as you can possibly get. But the second part, and this is the key, is that they have so much information about their users that they're able to offer targeted advertising that pretty much can't be replicated. They know where you live, they know what you're interested in, who your friends are, what your birth date is. That's a lot of valuable information for advertisers. And so when you combine the reach that they have with the targeting that they have, it pretty much sets Facebook apart.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about the virtual reality part of this, because as the consumer electronics show is underway, virtual reality is just all of the talk there. How is that going to be integrated, do you think, into Facebook? Have you seen any sort of test of this?
So that's a great question, and something that people have been talking a lot about, right? Is especially 2 years ago, I believe it was, when Facebook first bought Oculus, people were kind of scratching their head and saying, why does a social network need a virtual reality hardware company? I think that, Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook, has talked a lot about seeing virtual reality as the next platform, right? So we all use our phones right now to consume content, to consume Facebook. He believes that at some point in the future, those headsets, that virtual reality, is going to be the next phone. going, right? And so they're trying to invest very early in this. I don't necessarily know if that means we're going to see virtual reality inside of Facebook. I think they're coming close right now with what they call 360-degree videos. So if you look on your phone, there are certain videos that, depending on you know, where you hold your phone, you can see different parts of the room. It's as if your phone is a little hole in the wall that you can look around and see the video from all 360 degrees. That's about as close as they've come so far. But you know, that it's going to be worth watching, right? Like, how do they combine their Facebook product with 1.5 billion people with this new technology that a lot of people still aren't very familiar with?
I want to ask you about Twitter, too, because you've been writing about that. Jack Dorsey created quite a stir when he suggested that he might increase the character limit to 10,000 characters instead of 140. If you could give us an update on where that stands. I mean, he wasn't really serious, was he?
he was serious, and so we first reported in the fall that the company was looking to expand the character count so that people could write longer things on Twitter. Yesterday, we published that internally at the company, they're kicking around this idea of going all the way up to 10,000 characters. What it would look like is the tweets would actually look the same in your Twitter timeline. You know, it would just show the first 140 characters, but then it would signal you in some way that, hey, there's more content that you're not actually seeing. Click this button, and we'll expand the tweets so you can read the rest of it. So I think, you know, people are kind of freaking out because I think they're imagining this 10,000 character tweet taking up their, you know, 5 minutes to scroll on their phone, when in essence it's really going to be the same way that it is now, but just with the option to hide more stuff behind like a read more button. But I think the reason they want to do this is there are people out there who are sharing more than 140 characters, but in order to do so, they're doing things like taking a screenshot of a few sentences, and then they're sharing that screenshot. And I think that, you know, when they see that kind of activity, they say, okay, well, how can we fix this? This is one way to fix this. And the last thought on that, you know, if you look at what Facebook and Snapchat and LinkedIn and others are doing, they're starting to host content that's actually owned by publishers. So, like, for example, the Washington Post will publish a lot of their stories directly to Facebook. So no one's actually clicking the link and going back to the Washington Post. They're just simply consuming the entire story on Facebook. I think this gives Twitter a little bit of freedom to do something like that in the future if they wanted to create partnerships with different publishers to actually host content. So we'll see if they do that in 2016 as well.
All right, Kirk Wagner at Recode. Thanks for being with us this morning via Skype from San Francisco on the business of social media. You can follow Kurt at KurtWagner8 and then, of course, at Recode as well, and read more of his stories on this. Very interesting to see where social media, Facebook and Twitter, are headed this year. This is the opening bell on WGN 720. Dow futures are higher 107 points this hour. The S&P futures higher by 13 points.
The conversation has to be based on facts and truth and what we're actually proposing, not some, you know, imaginary fiction in which Obama's trying to take away your gun.
She's the best qualified person to keep us safe. She negotiated those sanctions on Iran and got Russia and China to agree. I didn't think she could do that.
We've been assured that it's not a question of if he's coming back, it's a question of when he's coming back. And as I've said over and over, we're patient. We'll wait. We'll be here. We're waiting on him.
What's going on in the world today? WGN 720 has you covered. News, Steve Cochran coming up. All of that this morning. But this is the opening bell on WGN 720. It's 5:37. Good morning. Thanks for being along with us this morning. The overseas markets, not as volatile as they have been in the past, but still a lot of anxiety. It was nice not to see anything explode literally overnight. And as we talk about this, you know, we have this conversation about what we should be doing if we're in the stock market, if we're investing, where our money should go. Should we panic? Should we be nervous or hang tough? We turn to Heather Long. She is CNN Money's markets and investing editor, and she's been writing a lot about this. Heather is with us live this morning on the opening bell. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning. Well, yeah. I think somebody sent me a note this overnight that said, make it stop.
Yeah, make it stop.
This morning looks a lot better.
And literally there were no explosions.
You know, yes, there were no... I think you summarized that well.
Right. So, you know, the question is, should we be panicking? And do you sense that people are maybe settling down a little, or is this anxiety going to continue?
Well, I mean, certainly we'll see what the market does. But today looks like it's going to be a better day, which is a good start. Chinese stocks actually gained today. And the oil market has stabilized. So those are the two big anxiety drivers of the week. You know, Chinese stocks lost 10% this week, which is a huge drop. And the oil prices hit their lowest in over a decade. But what I think the key here, for me, I always ask on weeks like this, has the world really changed? You know, from things weren't looking too bad at the end of December, has everything really gone to pot? And the key for a lot of U.S. investors is the U.S. economy still looks pretty good. I've been using the term, it's not great, it's good, but not great. And today we're going to get a key piece of economic data at 8:30 in the morning, and that's how many jobs were added in December. So our economists that we survey are estimating 212,000 jobs were added. Anything above about 200,000 jobs a month is really pretty darn good. You know, unemployment's down to 5%. The U.S. economy is still growing. So while China is a factor in what's going on right now, the reality is the bulk of the U.S. economy is strong, and the bulk of the U.S. economy is driven by people like you and me and your listeners going out and buying things. It's not about trading with China for the United States economy.
You say that, but it's hard not to understand that this has been the worst start on the market here in the United States for, you know, the start of the year ever. I mean, so what? I guess, do people have that in the back of their heads and they're thinking, wait, if the economy is doing so well, what's going on?
Definitely. You have to be a little nervous. It's human. I know I've been looking at all the red on the screen this week and thinking, uh-oh. But the other key that I keep telling myself, and I think anyone who has money in the market, is there's a great book called Triumph of the Optimist, and that really sums up how it works in the stock market, that if you can stay calm and keep your money in the market over the long term, you make money, at least you have historically. I was running some numbers yesterday. Since World War II, if you had kept your money in for at least 15 years in the stocks, you made money, and a lot of times you made a lot of money, as in doubling your money over that 15-year period. So when we look at the reason, say, the rich are getting richer and how the 1% are doing, it almost always, the key to getting in that millionaire club is to have money in the stock market. So that's what I try to keep telling myself, even when I see what's going on right now.
And so is there a particular area of the market that people should be focused on and focusing their stability on? Where do you see people putting their money?
Sure. Well, I think right now, as again today, we're probably going to see a nice bounce in the United States market because, again, those economic figures are probably going to look pretty good in just a few hours when that government data comes out. Believe it or not, a lot of investment experts are saying that Europe is a pretty good play this year. Why are they saying that? Because Europe is sort of where the United States was a couple of years back. Europe sort of came out of that great recession we just had a little bit slower. And what's happening is their central bank is pumping a lot of money into the European economy right now to try to get growth going again. And when the United States Federal Reserve, when our American central bank started doing that, we're sort of the ones that invented that playbook of really pumping tons of money into the economy. Our stock market surged. So while right now isn't so great, if you look from March of 2009, when the stock market bottomed after the Great Recession, to the end of last year, the stock market was up close to 200%. So that's it's one of the best bull markets of all time in U.S. history we were in the midst of. And so a lot of people think Europe is sort of is primed for similar types of growth this year.
you know, China is still the bull in the China shop in the, you know, figuratively. And I think a lot of people are nervous about that. If China explodes, and I mean that from a financial standpoint, I mean, it could theoretically take down other economies though, couldn't it?
It already is. You know, there's no doubt about it that China's economy is slowing, and the hard part is to know just how much it's slowing, because China is notorious for not putting out the real figures. So you sit here and you think, okay, I know that China's stock market is not China's economy. There's, it's not what we really need to focus on is how is China's economy doing? And we know that it's slowing. So even China, which says, our growth target's still right around 7%, even the Chinese government has said, actually, it's more like 6.9%. But most economists say, no, that's not a legitimate number. We think it's more like 4%. But the key is it's still growing. It's not like they're in some recession where they're contracting. It's just they're growing, at about half the speed they were growing. And, yeah, that's having huge repercussions around the world. I look at you, some of you may have been to Canada recently. Canada is currently in a recession largely because of China. You know, what does Canada do? It logs and it sells oil, right? And right now China is not buying as much of that stuff, and that has sent countries like Canada and Brazil, is another good example, into recession. Because China isn't buying commodities like it used to. But again, the key for the United States is how reliant is the United States economy on China? And the reality is trade with China is a very small part of our economy. You know, it's about 1%. So the impact of China on the United States is still much, much smaller than other parts of the world.
Well, Heather, I enjoy reading all of your material on CNN. I go there every morning, and you seem to be right on the money. And one of the things that you've written today is that a conservative portfolio doesn't make as much money, but it also doesn't lose as much in terrible years. And I think that's something that all of our investors and moneymakers need to keep in mind this week. And we hate to tell them not to pay attention to the markets, not to keep listening and, be nervous. But, is that maybe another option? Just don't, pay attention as much or what? We hate to tell them not to read our stuff.
Right?
But,
as a financial journalist, it's hard to say, you're better off just not listening to the news, basically. But you're pretty much giving spot on advice here.
Right. All right. Heather Long, CNN senior markets economy writer. You can follow her at By Heather Long and find all of her stuff at CNN Money, cnnmoney.cnn.com. Heather, thanks for being with us today. Hopefully we can have you back on the opening bell.
Sounds good.
All right.
Great.
Have a nice day.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. It's 5:51. I'm Steve Grzanich. Thanks for being with us today. The Congress gave us all some pretty nice holiday gifts before they went away for the holiday break in the way of tax breaks. And among those tax breaks, benefits for people who use Metra and CTA to get to work. Ashley Ebeling is an editor at Forbes magazine and joins us on the opening bell this morning. Ashley, the transit tax break could end up saving us a big chunk of money. Just how does that work?
If you work at an employer that offers this break, it's a federal tax break, but your employer has to offer it. You can potentially, you could be saving $1,200 a year in transit costs. So whatever your transit costs are, and you're depending on your tax bracket, you'll save that percentage off the costs.
And is it a before tax situation? Do you have to set up something like a flexible spending account for this?
It's very similar to flexible spending the way it works. And, in fact, a lot of the same benefit administrators who run those accounts run the transit accounts for employees. So you would see the same kind of interface. Once you sign up for it, it's just on a monthly basis that it comes out of your paycheck to get your pass.
In the past, transit hasn't been included to this level. Why do you think that's been? Why has the car and the motorists winning out on this tax break over transit riders for so many years?
Yeah, historically, the benefit for parking, bizarrely, was double that for transit. And then finally, in 2009, in a tax law, they put in a provision called parity, making the tax breaks equal. And that was then extended on this on-again, off-again basis, 1 year at a time, 2 years at a time. So it was very confusing for employers and employees. So now it's a huge deal that it's permanent. There's no question when you sign up now for 2016, you know what your tax benefit's going to be.
And so if you're at an employer that doesn't offer this, what should you go into the front office and ask for?
I tell them it's permanent now, and there's really no excuse for them not to offer it. And it's not just the employees who make out, but the employers, too. The employers are saving 7.65% on their payroll taxes. So it's one of those real win-win for employees and employers.
And it's a win-win, it would seem, too, for the environment, because you could theoretically be getting more cars off the roads.
Right, and that's obviously the reason for the transit tax break. They're trying to get people on trains and not on the highways.
What other tax breaks could help people put some more money in their pocketbooks this year?
Well, this was part of a huge tax deal that was done just in December, just before the holidays. And it includes breaks. One big one is for people who are 70 and a half and are older and want to give money to charity. They can now, on a permanent basis, they know they could take money out of their individual retirement account and give it to charity. And that would allow them to get more to charity or more in their pockets, whichever way you'd want to look at it. And other tax breaks include there's one for teacher supplies that was made permanent as well. So part of the thing that was interesting with this tax law is there were breaks that were on this on-again, off-again extended basis that they decided to make permanent.
Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer to make some of this stuff permanent. Why was there such hesitation to do some of this?
Well, it comes at a huge cost. So, and how is it going to be paid for? So that's some fiscal hawks thought it would be too expensive, and that's why they've been doing it on this non-permanent basis. So the school teacher supplies deduction was made permanent. The transit commuter break was permanent. This IRA charitable rollover, those are some of the permanent ones. And then others were extended just through 2016. So they were made retroactive to January 1st, 2015, and then extended through 2016. So that's just the 2 years. And that, for example, is the mortgage debt exclusion. So debt that's forgiven through a foreclosure, a short sale, or a loan modification won't be treated as taxable income.
I'm a new
example. So that's another good one. Another one is the mortgage insurance premiums deduction. Those premiums will be treated as deductible interest. So that's also extended through 2016.
Ashley Ebeling, editor at Forbes magazine, thanks for being with us on the opening bell today. Good advice. We always like to save money. $1,200 to $1,600 is nothing to laugh at either. So thanks again for being with us. Again, Ashley Ebeling at Forbes magazine.
Real quickly, just a summary of the market futures. The Dow futures are up 72 points. The S&P futures up 8. The overseas markets last night, the Hang Seng up 121. Shanghai up 61. The Nikkei down 69. Hey, thanks for having a conversation with us this week here on The Opening Bell. That's the show for today, and we will see you bright and early Monday morning. Have a great weekend. I'm Steve Krasanich.